Page 97. The Encampment at Trelberg, pages 97 through 112. Page 98 is blank. Page 99. For the space of 2 days, we sailed along a flat coast among many islands that are called the Land of Dans, coming finally to a region of marsh with a crisscross of narrow rivers that pour onto the sea. These rivers have no names themselves, but are each one called Wick, and the peoples of the narrow rivers are called Wickings, which means the Northmen warriors who sail their ships up the rivers and attack settlements in such fashion. Footnote 1. Now in this marshy region we stop at a place they call Trelberg, which was a wonder to me. Here is no town, but rather a military camp, and its people are warriors, with few women or children among them. Footnote 1. There is some dispute among modern scholars about the origin of the term Viking, but most agree with Ibn Fadlan that it derives from Vik, meaning a creek of narrow river. Return to text. Page 100. The defenses of this camp of Trelberg are constructed with great care and skill of workmanship in the Roman fashion. Trelberg lies at the joining point of two wicks, which then run to the sea. The main part of the town is encircled by a round earthwork wall, as tall as 5 men standing one atop the other. Above the earthen ring there stands a wooden fence for greater protection. Outside the earthen ring there is a ditch filled with water, the depth I do not know. These earthworks are excellently made, of a symmetry and quality to rival anything we know. And there is this further, on the landward side of the town, a second semicircle of high wall and a second ditch beyond. The town itself lies within the inner ring, which is broken by 4 gates facing the 4 corners of the earth. Each gate is barred by strong oaken doors with heavy fittings of iron and many guards. Many guards also walk the ramparts, keeping watch day and night. Inside the town stand 16 wooden dwellings, all the same. There are long houses, for so the Northmen call them, with walls that curve so they resemble overturned boats with the ends cut flat front and back. In length they are 30 paces and wider in the middle portion than either end. Page 101. They are arranged thus, 4 long houses precisely set so as to form a square. 4 squares are arranged to make 16 houses in all. Footnote 2. Every long house has but one entrance, and no house has its entrance within sight of another. I inquired why this was so, and Herger said thus, "If the camp is attacked, the men must run to defense, and the doorways are such that the men can hasten without mingling and confusion, but on the contrary each man can proceed freely to the task of defense. Thus it is within the square that one house has a north door, the next house an east door, the next house a south door, the next house a west door, so also each of the 4 squares. Then also I saw that while the Northmen are gigantic, these doorways were so low that even I must bend in two to enter one of the houses. I inquired of Herger, who said, "If we are attacked, a single warrior may remain inside the house, and with his sword cut off the heads of all who enter. The door is low, so that heads will be bent for cutting." Footnote 2. The accuracy of Ibn Fadlan's reporting is confirmed here by direct archaeological evidence. In 1948, the military site of Trelborg in Western Zealand and Denmark was excavated. The site corresponds exactly to Ibn Fadlan's description of the size, nature, and structure of the settlement. Return to text. Page 102. Verily, I saw that in all respects the Trelberg town was constructed for warfare and for defense. No trading is conducted here at all, as I have said. Inside the long houses there are 3 sections or rooms, each with a door. The center room is the largest, and it also has a pit for rubbish. Now I saw that the Trelberg people were not as the Northmen along the Volga. These were clean people for their race. They washed in the river and relieved their waste out of doors, and were in all ways much superior to what I had known. Yet they are not truly clean, except in comparison. The society of Trelberg is mostly men, and the women are all slaves. There are no wives among the women, and all women are taken freely as the men desire. The people of Trelberg live on fish and some little bread. They do no agriculture or farming, although the marshlands surrounding the town contain areas suitable for growing. I asked of Herger why there was no agriculture, and he said to me, "These are warriors. They do not till the soil." Bulliwif and his company were graciously received by the chiefs of Trelberg, who are several, foremost among them one who is called Sagard. Sagard is a strong and fierce man, almost as huge as Bulliwif himself. Page 103. During the night banquet, Sagard inquired of Bulliwif his mission and the reasons for his travels, and Bulliwif reported of the supplication of Wulfgar. Herger translated all for me, although in truth I had spent sufficient time among these heathens to learn a word or two in their tongue. Here is the meaning of the conversation of Sagard and Bulliwif. Sagard spoke this: "It is sensible for Wulfgar to carry out the errand of a messenger, though he is the son of the king Hrothgar, for the several sons of Hrothgar have set upon one another." Bulliwif said that he did not know of this, or words to that meaning. But I perceived that he was not greatly surprised. Yet it is true that Bulliwif was seldom surprised by anything. Such was his role as leader of the warriors and hero to them. Sagard spoke again. "Indeed, Hrothgar had 5 sons, and 3 are dead at the hand of one of them, Wiglaf, a cunning man, whose conspirator in this affair is the herald of the old king." Footnote 3. Literally, a two-handed man. As will be clear later, the Northmen were ambidextrous in fighting, and to shift weapons from one hand to another was considered an admirable trick. Thus a two-handed man is cunning. A related meaning was once attached to the word shifty, which now means deceitful and evasive, but formerly had a more positive sense of resourceful, full of maneuvers. Return to text. Page 104. Only Wulfgar remains faithful, and he has departed. Bulliwif said to Sagard that he was glad to know of this news, and would hold it in his mind, and there the conversation ended. Never did Bulliwif or any of his warriors show surprise at the words of Sagard, and from this I took that it is ordinary for the sons of a king to dispose of one another to gain the throne. Also it is true that from time to time a son may murder his father the king to gain the throne, and this is likewise counted nothing remarkable, for the Northmen see it the same as any drunken brawl among warriors. The Northmen have a proverb which is, "Look to your back," and they believe that a man must always be prepared to defend himself, even a father against his own son. Upon our departure, I inquired of Herger why there should be another fortification on the landward side of Trelberg, and yet no such additional fortification on the seaward side. These Northmen are seafaring men who attack from the sea, and yet Herger said, "It is the land that is dangerous." I asked of him, "Why is the land dangerous?" And he replied, "Because of the mists." Upon our departure from Trelberg, the warriors assembled there beat their staves upon their shields, raising a loud noise for our ship which set sail. Page 105. This, I was told, was to draw the attention of Odin, one of the number of their gods, so that this Odin would look with favor upon the journey of Bulliwif and his 12 men. Also this I learned, that the number 13 is significant to the Norsemen, because the moon grows and dies 13 times in the passage of 1 year by their reckoning. For this reason, all important accountings must include the number 13. Thus Herger said to me that the number of dwellings in Trelberg was 13, and also 3 more, instead of 16, as I have expressed it. Further, I learned that these Northmen have some notion that the year does not fit with exactitude into 13 passages of the moon, and thus the number 13 is not stable and fixed in their minds. The 13th passage is called magical and foreign, and Herger says, "Thus for the 13th man you were chosen as foreign." Verily, these Northmen are superstitious, with no recourse to sense or reason or law. They seem to my eyes to be fierce children, and yet I was among them, and so held my tongue. Soon enough I was glad for my discretion, for these events followed. Page 106. We were sailing some time from Trelberg when I recalled that never previously had the inhabitants of a town made a departure ceremony with beating of shields to call upon Odin. I spoke as much to Hergr. "It is true," he responded, "there is a special reason for the call to Odin, for we are now upon the Sea of Monsters." This seemed to me proof of their superstition. I inquired if any of the warriors had ever seen such monsters. "Indeed, we have all seen them," Hergr said. "Why else should we know of them?" By the tone of his voice, I could recognize that he thought me a fool for my disbelief. Some further time passed when there was a shout, and all the warriors of Bullywiff stood pointing to the sea, watching, shouting amongst themselves. I asked Hergr what had happened. "We are among the monsters now," he said, pointing. "Now the ocean in this region is most turbulent. The wind blows with fierce force, turning the curl of the sea white with foam, spitting water into the face of a sailor and playing tricks with his sight. I watched the sea for many minutes and had no view of this sea monster, and I had no reason to believe what they said." Page 107. "Then when one of their number shouted to Odin, a scream of prayer, repeating the name many times in supplication, and then I also saw with my own eyes the sea monster. It was in the shape of a giant snake that never raised its head above the surface, yet I saw its body curl and twist over, and it was very long and wider than the Northman's boat and black in color. The sea monster spat water into the air like a fountain and then plunged down, raising a tail that was cleft in two, like the forked tongue of a snake. Yet it was enormous, each section of the tail being broader than the largest palm frond. Now I saw another monster, and another, and perhaps after that, there appeared to be four and perhaps six or seven. Each behaved as his fellows, curving through the water, spitting a fountain, and raising a giant tail split in two. At the sight, the Northmen shouted to Odin for aid, and not a few of their number fell to their knees on the deck trembling. Verily, I saw with my own eyes the sea monsters all about us in the ocean, and then after some time had passed, they were gone, and we did not see them again. The warriors of Bullywiff resumed their sailing efforts, and no man spoke of the monsters. But I was much afraid long afterward, and Hergr told me that my face was white as the face of a North person, and he laughed. Page 108. "What does Allah say to this?" he asked of me, and to that I had no answer. Footnote 4. In the evening we beached and made a fire, and I inquired of Hergr if the sea monsters ever attacked a ship on the sea, and if so, what was the manner of it, for I had seen the heads of none of these monsters. Hergr answered by calling Ethgau, one of the nobles and the lieutenant of Bullywiff. Ethgau was a solemn warrior who was not merry except when drunk. Hergr said that he had been on a ship that was attacked. Ethgau said this to me, that the sea monsters are larger than anything on the surface of the land, and larger than any ship on the sea, and when they attack, they ride under a ship and lift it into the air, and toss it aside like a bit of wood, and crush it with their forked tongue. Footnote 4. This account of what is obviously a sighting of whales is disputed by many scholars. It appears in the manuscript of Razi, as it is here, but in Sogren's translation it is much briefer, and in it the Northmen are shown as playing an elaborate joke upon the Arab. The Northmen knew about whales and distinguished them from sea monsters, according to Sogren. Other scholars, including Hassan, doubt that Ibn Fadlan could be unaware of the existence of whales, as he appears to be here. Return to text. Page 109. Ethgau said that there had been 30 men on his ship, and only he and two others beside had survived by the graciousness of the gods. Ethgau spoke in an ordinary manner of talking, which for him was very serious, and I believed him to be speaking the truth. Also, Ethgau told me that the Northmen know that the monsters attack ships because they desire to mate with the ship, mistaking it for one of their own. For this reason, the Northmen do not build their ships over large. Hergr said to me that Ethgau is a great warrior renowned in battle, and that he is to be believed in all things. For the next 2 days we sailed among the islands of the Dan country, and then on the third day we crossed a passage of open water. Hero.